Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformation as Strategy, Creating a Lasting Competitive Edge, a podcast brought to you by the experts at Roland Berger Americas. I'm your host, Sean McMahon, and for today's episode, we're going to focus on the recently completed Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Joining me for that conversation is Philip Leitiger, Head of Digital in North America, and Stefan Kies, Managing Director of North America. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Very good. Excited to be here.
Very good. Thanks for having us.
It's wonderful to have you here. As I mentioned, CES 2026 just wrapped up. I want to kick off today's conversation by asking each of you for some of your key takeaways from this year's gathering. Philip, let's start with you.
Obviously, CES again was a blast. It was a massive event. There were lots and lots of people and many miles to cover walking the halls. Overall, I have to say, though, there has been less excitement on the booths, less excitement on the shop floor, and instead a grand showing of executives, senior decision makers, and people who just came to Vegas to network and to have those conversations that are so important.
I understand. So a little different flavor for you. What about you, Stefan?
I think it was a great show as always, but the show has evolved over the last few years. If I think back to the show, especially pre-COVID, 2018, 2019, you walked the halls at every single booth, you stopped, you saw something truly new, truly innovative, truly different. And honestly, the big surprises and the big developments were not on the floor this year. The executives were, and it was great to network and to connect, but the big announcements were all made in the press releases, in the keynote speeches, or in the talks in the hallway with different companies. And that's where the true value of CES today lies for me. It was the connection with executives from all around the world, from Europe, from Asia, of course, from the US, where you could catch up on latest trends, latest developments, and learn about the innovations that the companies had done. But many companies have cut down their investments at CES, have downsized their booths in order to focus on the content much more on the much more than on the show itself.
Okay, so Stefan, did you notice any particular industries that were kind of stressing more of what the announcements were rather than product reviews?
Automotive, of course, is always a very big participant, but not all of the OEMs were present at CES this year. You could see big showings from a handful of OEMs, but many of the big contributors from the past, they sent their executives, they didn't have the showing. What you did see were gradual progressions on autonomy, on HMI, on human-machine interface, on electrification. They weren't the big breakthroughs as in the past, but there were continuations and smaller steps in the right direction towards industrialization and towards mass marketing of these new technologies. The second big area that was very prominent was robotics, both humanoid robotics as well as all kinds of different applications, heavily in the hands of the Chinese. Not very surprising. We estimate that about 50% of the global market in robotics at the moment is dominated by Chinese manufacturers. And they showed new innovations that were both impressive and, I would have to say, disappointing at the same time. Impressive because the advancements that were done, especially in the area of visual perception and of haptics on the individual applications, were really astonishing. You saw very detailed, very accurate assembly operations by different robots. You saw robots playing ping pong, probably better than I could have played it. But at the same time, you also saw a lot of mistakes, a lot of errors. You saw humanoid robots simply collapsing on the floor. You saw sweeping robots falling downstairs. So it's clear that the technology is progressing, but it's not quite yet where I would consider it ready for mass market rollout. Philip, I don't know how you saw it.
I think one of the areas I was most excited about was obviously artificial intelligence. And that was the big topic at the fair. A lot of discussion, a lot of trying to get meat behind the hype that we've been seeing in the last couple of months. I feel like many executives were at the Consumer Electronics Show just to get their fingers on the pulse and maybe discuss with their peers how this topic is developing, where we are currently seeing progress, what tangible impact is being made, and which challenges are still underway. The big players in artificial intelligence, especially the chip companies, had a massive role at the organization. We saw a lot of highlight events, a lot of interactions of their senior executives, a lot of announcements. And what we really saw was that, especially NVIDIA, but also their competitors like AMD, like Qualcomm, moved from just being a manufacturing company to an ecosystem player, showcasing the strength of their technology, the opportunities that their technology provides with their partners, with potential people who can put this in play, who can bring this from the chipset and the model, maybe into the physical world, maybe into the enterprise. And that was really the main play of these kinds of platform companies. And something that I did feel was happening was that, as we shared before, the big announcements were maybe a topic of 2025. But now people were really building those blocks that are necessary to make them become true. And we had a lot of big announcements, which may not have, you know, the thunder of a walking robot, but which would have massive impact in the industry. Think about the new energy efficient chips on Vera Rubin, which NVIDIA claims will reduce the power consumption of data centers and thus allow us to have more compute on the existing or future build-out of our electricity grids. I think that's something to take in mind, how the equation AI, energy and build-out of chips is changing day by day as these developments surface.
Okay, now you mentioned there was, you know, maybe more announcements, you know, from executives rather than, you know, product displays, or as you mentioned, Stefan, some product displays were impressive and some that perhaps weren't. Did you notice any progress on, you know, major announcements or major products from previous years, perhaps stuff that from 2025 or 2024 that was announced that even at the time the executives said, hey, this is going to take 5-10 years, but now there's a little bit of an update provided at this year's CES?
I think you saw gradual small step developments. For example, Zoox or Waymo had their cars out on the street, and instead of doing a big splashy display, they were actually using it to transport people around. You didn't have that a couple of years ago. So you saw how these new technologies are slowly being brought into everyday's lives. Philip was talking about AI, and I mean, AI was everywhere. Every single booth had to have some form of AI component, whether it fit the product or didn't really matter. There had to be AI as part of the booth. And that leads to applications where you have to question the true value add. If your washing machine tells you, wants to communicate with you, that's a nice gimmick, but I'm not sure how practicable that truly is. But once again, if you then go back to the conversations you have in the hallways, the conversations you have at one of the many events, and you meet with the companies that tell you on how they deploy AI on very specific pain points in R&D, pain points in manufacturing, pain points in sales forecasting, where they bring these concrete big data solutions, they enrich them with an AI agent, with an AI bot, to make it even more powerful and get to the next next level efficiencies for the companies. That's that for me was truly new. I did not have those conversations 2 years ago because people didn't really know yet on how to solve these pain points through AI-enabled solutions. So again, progress on a small scale, but very important, very powerful if deployed in the right applications.
And I really feel that this experience that Stefan just shared on autonomous driving is maybe a little bit of forecast of what we're going to see on physical robots walking the hallways, right? So that conversation of the self-driving car is now already a couple of years old. There was a lot of hype in the beginning. People communicated very short timelines. Then there was, a little bit a disappointment. It took us several years to make meaningful progress. Maybe some players left the field early and thought, these problems, these challenges are too difficult to solve. And now we see this resurgence. And now we see that the field of players who are advancing right now may be very different from those which were hoping for short-term wins a couple of years ago. So executives are understanding better how the current wave of technology is affecting their operating models, what kind of timelines are realistic, and they understand that they need honest and grounded advice on what timelines they should plan for different technologies to impact their operating models and to be really applicable for the kind of work that they do.
Okay, it's wonderful to hear about all this technology, and AI and all that. But I'm quite curious, in a year like this, with so much uncertainty going on in the world, did you hear anyone talking about, how to approach 2026 from both a strategic and perhaps an operational perspective?
I think at that point, we don't only talk about technology, we talk about the general political and economic environment as well. And I mean, the world has become so complicated. It would have been surprising if that would not have been a topic at CES. Everyone just started into the new year. Everyone had just wrapped up 2025. 2025 was a roller coaster for most organizations. And of course, the number one topic, even before you talked about AI, before you talked about technologies, was always, how is 2026 going to shape up? And the general expectations from the executives is that 2026, unfortunately, will be a repeat of 2025. The volatility, the dynamic that we have in the market, the changing environments, whether it's on the trade side, whether it's political, whether it's even armed conflicts, or whether it's technology involvements, developments, this volatility will remain and will continue throughout 2026. And one of the key topics where all the executives agreed is that flexibility is a number one priority, is really the cornerstone of the operating model as we move into the new year. Simply because flexibility allows you to handle the volatility in the market, the dynamics much better. And you have to approach that flexibility, of course, even in your efficiency measures. So having the rigid plans that we had in the past very clearly laid out is probably not going to work anymore, because you have to be able to adapt and react fast to the developments that you have. By the way, and this brings us back to the technology here can help. And we see this, and this was also a big agreement, especially AI can help. Because one of the biggest supporters for flexibility at the end is data transparency. And AI can create a level of data transparency that organizations haven't seen before. So that's where executives are particularly interested at the moment. How do I deploy AI applications that create more transparency on individual processes, on individual business functions, to help me gain more efficiency while also being able to react better to the ever-changing environment?
And it's clear that there are very tangible ramifications of the statement that Stefan has just made, allowing us to understand how we need to shape a transformation agenda. If that's true, then everything executives focus on needs to be kind of bite-sized. We need to be able to iterate in smaller steps, and we need to be able to course correct when we find out that our assumptions of the future are no longer true because the environment has just changed. And so I believe that when we're thinking about innovation, when we're thinking about reconfiguring our supply chains, when we're thinking about those transformation topics, we're no longer in the world where, you know, we're going to see single massive investments and long thought through roadmaps. We're going to be in a world where we have a clear North Star, where components like more resilience, more flexibility, more agility of organizations is going to be key. And then a lot of individual, self-funded, bite-sized projects to move us to that future. So I think we're going to move into a world where those big, large transformation projects, when we're thinking about big reconfiguration of supply chains, big data-driven transformation topics, big technology topics, are going to be transformed. And we're going to look at more flexible, more pay-as-you-go, more self-funded, smaller innovation cycles towards a clear North Star vision, where elements like flexibility, like resilience, like multi-optionality are going to be ingredients of a future strategic positioning.
So when you think back to CES 2026 and the future of global business, what were some of your key insights that you gleaned from either the speakers or just in your conversations on the sidelines?
So you heard me being a little bit more skeptical on some of the new technologies and talking a bit about the evolution in smaller steps rather than the big technological breakthroughs. And I think that will hold true for the next coming years. I wouldn't be surprised if you see radically new step change innovations suddenly pop up at CES 27 or 28. I think if I actually go back to autonomous driving as a very nice comparison, and I remember CES 2015, 2016, where all the OEMs, all the technology providers came out and said, we will have autonomous cars out on the roads by 2018. That was a very specific press release made by a very prominent OEM. Now we are in 2026, and we still have a really insignificant market share as it comes to urban mobility of autonomous driving. I think the same will be true for things like humanoid robots. We will see a small step progression for the next couple of years. We will see more and more applications. We will see the technology evolving. But I think we will be in the late 2030s until we see any form of larger rollout of humanoid robots in daily life applications, even on the horizon. And I think the same goes for autonomous driving. Until we'll see autonomous driving in the inner cities of Mumbai or Mexico City, I think we'll probably have to wait for a few more years. Waymo is now successful, is now prepared to move into Miami and to move into London to start covering some additional cities, carefully mapping them out and geo-ring-fencing the areas in which the vehicles can operate. So we will see a gradual rollout and application of the technologies, but it just takes time for these technologies to mature. And as we always see, the technological challenges are not as easy to overcome as people may assume at the very beginning.
I agree. It's really about we overestimate what can be done in a year. We underestimate what happens in 10 years. We underestimate the ramifications something can have as essentially a humanoid robot or a self-driving car would change our economy. But at the same time, I think it's important to also understand the underlying technological steps that are necessary for our companies to remain competitive and remain good partners in this emerging ecosystem. And I think here topics around hardware as a platform play a massive role. We've seen a lot of innovation on different form factors, on different applications throughout CES. Are all of them going to become mass market? Probably not. But how to sustain the flexibility, how to sustain the opportunity to partner, how to sustain the agility to essentially execute on some of these things. That's only possible if we rethink also our hardware stack, if we rethink the kind of innovation that we're doing on, you know, chip level design, firmware design, form factor design, and make sure that we think in, you know, nonlinear timeframes, open and modular approaches of how future products are going to look like in order to make sure that we are successful with innovating and modernizing our portfolio and operating model in these very uncertain times.
Okay, so with all this innovation that's coming forth, you know, across various sectors, it's coming to us at a time when there's also a lot of uncertainty, you know, going on around the world. So, you know, we're speaking to one of your clients. If they're listening to this show, what advice do you have for them for, you know, turning all that uncertainty into their own competitive advantage?
We talked earlier about the dynamic that we have in the market, the volatility and the need for transparency and flexibility. And I think the same to a certain extent goes for innovation. You absolutely need to have a North Star. You need to have an objective. You need to know where you want to go. But at the same time, you need to be agile enough in order to incorporate the developments, whether they are economic developments, political developments, or technological developments, into your innovation roadmap. And that also relates to the CapEx that is tied up into innovation. You need to be able to plan in line with the business development. You want to be bold, but at the same time, cautious. And that's a bit the conundrum in which we live, that the best plans at the moment become very quickly obsolete with one or two new announcements on the political front and with all the different changes that we have. So you need to retain the flexibility in your operating model and in your innovation pipeline.
I agree. I think really important that we stay super flexible and super close to all kinds of developments, whether they're innovation, whether they're politics, whether they're trade relations. And at the same time, that we really, you know, reassure ourselves what our organizations are capable to delivering when it comes to transformation, when it comes to putting change on the ground, and to be realistic, what kind of timelines and what kind of efforts it takes to really move forward towards that future state. And so I encourage all of us to bring these different factors together and chart a realistic, tangible, and bite-sized approach forward as we navigate 2026 and beyond.
And maybe one last statement. In this world, cash is king. And it's important for companies to also moderate their outlook, maximize their performance. And I've seen very well-performing companies at the end struggling because they didn't have the balance sheet to follow through with what they were intending. So it's great to have the moonshots. It's great to go with after all the advanced technologies, but you have to make sure that you have the performance in the underlying core business that creates enough cash to actually be able to finance those investments.
Okay, well, I appreciate that insight, Stefan, that last little nugget about cash being king. It seems very, very appropriate since we're talking about an event in Las Vegas, right? Gentlemen, I appreciate you sharing all your takeaways and your key insights about why CES, you know, continues to shape the innovation agenda. And thank you both very much for your time today.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for having us.